We will begin on Daf Nun Gimel Amud Beis at the bottom of the Amud. Amar Papi, Boy Rabibi Rabai, the following question was asked. Veshet Nekvosai B'mashahu. As we learned from the beginning of our perek, that a hole, the most minimal size hole by a veshet, would make the animal a treifa. Drusasai, the halacha simile, as we've been discussing, the halacha of a drusa, if an animal was attacked by another animal, makes the animal into a treifa. And the question is, how much of a hole was made by this attacking animal that it should be considered a drusa? Says the drusa b'mashu, so too, the shear of a drusa is b'mashu. Hakana, but when we speak about the kana, as we're going to learn, the size of a hole in a kana that makes the kana a treifa is the size of an iser. And the question that the Gemara poses is drusasa bekama, how much of a hole made by a drusa will make in the kana will make the animal into a drusa? And the question is that even though that the Rishonim have a number of ways of explaining this Gemara, some say that even though the hole of a kana is always the size of an iser, but here, if there's going to be eris, if there's going to be venom inserted into the kana of the animal, and it's going to reach the veshet from the veshet and the kana near each other, and by a veshet, we're learning the shear is a mashahu, so therefore we have to be concerned that that veshet will now get, because of the kana, a hole of a mashahu, and therefore the whole, any amount of venom that goes into the kana will also be that size. On the other hand, the other side of the question is that the hole should be no different, that the drusa should be no different than the hole. And since the hole is a kisser, the drusa should be an isser. That's one way of learning. The other way I saw Rishonim explain the Gemara's question is that although, yes, the only hole that is considered a hole that would make the drusa, that would make the animal a drusa, a treifa by a kana, is a hole of a iser. Any hole smaller than the size of an iser is not considered a hole that can make this animal into a treifa, because they were talking about a treifa, and a hole of a the hole of a kisser is the hole that makes it a treifa. Anything less is not a treifa. But when we speak about a drusa, it's not the hole per se that is the issue. The issue by a drusa is the venom. And therefore, when we speak about the venom, the shear of a hole is not the issue. The issue is the venom. And therefore, even if the venom is just made a minimal amount, it's enough to make it into a drusa. Says the Gemara Basa de Balya, after this question was posed, had the Pashta, it was answered that Echazeb Echazeb, whether it's the Kana or whether it's the Veshit, the amount of Drusa is B'mashahu. And says the Gemara, my Tama, what's the reason? Sihire, the poison, Mikli Kaliv Ozel, it goes on. And as we just said, both Pshatim, whether it means that it goes right on to the Veshit, and thereby the Veshit, any minimal amount will be an issue, or even the Kana itself, being affected by the Eres, by the venom, will make it into a Treifa. Says the Gemara, Yosef Yitzchak bar Masa, Kameid Rav Nachman, the Yosef Kamar, and he was discussing, he said, Drusa Sh'amru, the Drusa that we've been discussing, Tzricha B'dika K'neg Meim Ayim. When we have an animal that was a drusa, and we have to inspect it, we have to inspect the entire bottom of the animal to see if the animal got red. And if there's no redness on any part of that area of the animal, we have reason to be, we could be lenient and not identify this victim as a drusa. Amar Rav Nachman, to which Rav Nachman said, Olakim, and made a shvua, Maribay Rav Paskind, that when we're discussing this inspect the area of a drusa, what did he mean? He meant mikapa ver atma, from the kapa, which the Gemara is going to explain in a moment, till the atma. So it's very interesting to point out that in our previous year, we had a very extensive discussion. Everybody agrees, the Mishnah said, that an animal which is a drusa is certainly not kosher. The question was, when we have a Suffolk drusa, what does the halacha say about a Suffolk drusa? And when we learned the Gemara, we learned that that it's machlokes Rav and Shmuel. So from here we see, and Rav holds that a Suffolk drusa is kosher. So the Rishonim point out that from here Rav we see that when Rav holds that when we're learning that you could do an inspection on the victim of a drusa to determine if it's a drusa, the halacha is not only in a Suffolk drusa, but even by vaday drusa. And this is the way they developed the point. They say that this halacha about the inspection was taught to us by Rav. Now let's understand Rav. Rav is the man that holds that a Suffolk drusa is not an issue. So if Rav holds that a Suffolk drusa is not an issue, this Gemara that's speaking about the type of inspection we do cannot be speaking about a Suffolk drusa. It must be speaking about a vaday drusa. And our Gemara is teaching us that even by a vaday drusa, an inspection is acceptable. Because otherwise, why would Rav be teaching us this halacha? Suffolk drusa for him is not a question. However, I did see the Or Sameach and other achronim that say that this proof that we just said is really not very compelling. And the reason they explain that this proof is not really very compelling is because they explain that the Suffolk drusa could be said in a number of situations. It could be a Suffolk drusa, as we're saying, that the animal was attacked, but we don't know if it became a drusa or not. And as we've been learning, it is the opinion of Rav that when we have a Suffolk drusa, the animal is considered kosher. But there could be another case of a Suffolk drusa, and that is that we know for certain that there was an animal that was attacked. We just don't, and then one of these animals were attacked, and there, that animal got mixed up with other animals. In such a case, even Rav would agree that we can't just be lenient because we don't know which is the animal that was attacked. For we know for certain there was an animal that was attacked. And that's the case that Rav is addressing. The Gemara is addressing here where we have one animal got mixed up with other animals. So is to a degree a Suffolk, but it's not the same Suffolk that we described a moment ago. That's where Rav says we could do the investigation. But what we know for certain, that this is the animal that was attacked, it's very possible that Rav would agree that an inspection, this bedikah, would not work. So the Gemara said that Rav Nachman just said that what did Rav say is required to do a proper inspection? We have to do mikapa avad atma. Ask the Gemara, my kappa, exactly what was meant when it said kappa. Ilam kappa de yada. If we would say it means the shoulder blades, and it's coming to teach us that we have to do from the kappa de yada until the thigh, and as we've said previously, that would mean that we have to also inspect the covered, the liver, and the raya area. Hainu, so says the Gemara, that really isn't anything significantly different from what we've been learning till now, that the inspection is done, keneged b'nei ma'ayim. Says the Gemara, what it means is kapa de moicha. It means from the skull at atma until the thigh. And here too, there's a discussion in the Rishonim, what does it mean when we say from the skull? Some say actually from the skull, but others say that it doesn't mean from the skull itself, because the brain, the skull, is well protected, and therefore we don't have to worry about a drusa on the actual skull area. It means from below the skull until the atma. We've been explaining that it means the atma until the thigh. There are ever many that point out that on one of the trephis, when we speak about an animal, is a buka de atma. Bukadatma is that the thigh is displaced, as we're going to describe. But there's also another trefa, which is called the Tsumas Agidin. The Tsumas Agidin are the tendons at the bottom of the leg. And the halacha is that those tendons, the halacha is that if any of those tendons are torn, the animal is a trefa. And what the Gemara here means to say, until the Atma, it's including the area of the Tsumas Agidin, that area as well must be inspected. Says the Gemara, Kisolik Rav Chiya ben Yosef. Rav Chiya ben Yosef came from Bava Tetz Yisrael, asked Chinu to Yoichim Resh Lakish. He met Rav Yoichim Resh Lakish, V'yasvi V'kamri. They were sitting and teaching us Drusa Shamru. That when we speak about a drusa, and we speak about a drusa requiring inspection, it means keneged b'neimayim in the stomach area. Amalhu, to which Rav Chiya ben Yosef told him, Halakim, again, a lashon shvua. Mayer be Rav. Rav has been teaching us that the inspection has to be done from kappa, from whatever pshat we learn in kappa, either the shoulder blade or the bottom or the skull or the bottom of the skull, ad atma until the thigh. We says the Gemara, Amalei Rish Lakish. So Rish Lakish said to Rabbi Yochanan, here there was a report what Rav said. So he question was, Manu Rav, who's this Rav? Well, Manu Rav, you keep on saying over halacha in the name of Rav. And he said, "V'lo yadanale, I don't even know who is this Rav." So the Teres Shol asked the obvious question: how could Rav Rish Lakish not have known who Rav was? That we know the Rav, and the Gemara is going to teach us the Rav was a close Talmud of Rebbe. That everybody knew Rebbe, and everybody therefore knew Rav. So some say that originally, as we've discussed in previous shurim, Rav's name was really Abba, and that was the name by which he was called. Ultimately, they changed his name from Abba. Everybody started calling him instead of Abba, they started calling him Rav. But while he was still by Rebbe, he was known as Abba. So now he was known as Rav once he came to Bavel. But Rish Lakish did not know that they changed his name, that this Abba that they all knew was Rav. So says the Gemara, Amalei Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, V'loi nehirelei, lois a Talmud. So he says, don't you remember that Talmud that learned in the yeshiva by Rebbe? Shishimish is Rebbe Rabba, who was a Talmud Muvik of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rav Chiya, and he also was a Talmud of Rav Chiya. V'lekim, and I say to you in a shvua, kol ois hashana shishimish ois Talmud b'yeshiva, all those days that he was in the yeshiva, anish shimashti b'amida, and whenever I learned by them, I learned by them and by Rav standing. Uman gover, and what makes him great, you ask? He says, what makes him great is Gava Bakula. He is great in all areas of Yiddishkeit. He's a great Talmud Chacham, and not only is he a great Talmud Chacham, but he also is a Chassid as well. So we see here that what made that he stood, what he said was in demonstrating the greatness of Rav was that whenever he learned by Rav, he would stand. So it's interesting to point out that the Ramah says that the Shulchan Aruch says that we learn nowadays when we're sitting, but the Ramah in Yeridei Simen Reish Mem Vav Sif Yud Gimel says that when we ask a Talmud Chacham a question, we should ask that standing, and the Shach and Sif Katan Yud Aleph says that that's actually difficult to understand because the Gemara says that Yar de Chul Shel Olam, people don't have the same strength as they originally had. And even though they were able originally to learn Torah b'amida, they were able to learn Torah when they were standing, we are not able to do so anymore. So how does the Ramah say that we're standing? So I saw that the Adaris, already answers this question. He says, our Gemara is really the answer to this question. Because even though the Talmid, even though we don't have the strength to learn Torah when we're standing, but just like we see that when there's a special point to show respect, then we do stand. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan said, is the way he treated Rebbe and Rav, that whenever he learned by them, he would stand. So the same thing that Darren says is that even though normally we sit nowadays when we learn, that's only when we're just learning or listening to a shir. But when we're approaching a Talmid Chacham to talk to him about Divrei Torah or to ask a shayla, then we should actually stand. Says the Gemara, Miat Pasuk Resh Lakish V'Omar, immediately Resh Lakish began by saying, Baram Zocha Oysish L'Toiv. Now, he says, I certainly remember Rav very well, Shamash Shmuel V'Piv, that they used to say the following halacha in his name. Shmuta, if we have an animal or a bird where the gageres, the kana, is shmuta, it's moved out of place, the shchuta, and now we see that after we did the shchita, the kana was moved out of place. And actually, the Rishonim all point out that even though the Gemara is focused on the kana, on the trachea that's moved out of place, and we're learning now that if it was moved out of place before the Shechita, it would disqualify the Shechita. And therefore, as we're going to learn now, the question is, how do we determine when was it moved out of place, before or after the Shechita? The same halacha would apply by the Veshit. However, the Rishonim point out that a kana that's moved out of place is much more common than a veshit that's moved out of place. And that's why the Gemara is focusing on the kana. So again, shmuta v'shchuta, we have a kana that's not in the right place, and we've discovered this after the shchita. And now we have a question, when did this happen? Did it happen before the shchita, which would make the animal into a trefa? Did it happen after the shchita, which the animal is perfectly kosher? So he says, Kshera, the animal's kosher. She efshe shmuta shteyasa shchuta. You can't do a shchita on a kana that's not in the right place. So we see that this animal had a proper shchita, then it's a proof that it was shmuta after the shchita. Rav Yochanan says that this is not enough of a reason to be lenient. Rather, says Rav Yochanan, what should we do? Yavi v'yakev. What we should do is, that we should take another gargaris, and there's a machloikus. What does that mean? Most Rishonim point out that we should take this. I think that we should take this gargaris that we have, this kana that we're speaking about, and cut it. And we should now look at the two cuts. If the two cuts are similar, so this cut that we just made was clearly made after the shchita. And if this cut was made after the shchita, so, and the cut that we have already here looked the same, so then we see that if we see that the two cuts are the same, then it's a proof that this cut happened after the shchita. If they're not the same, so it's a proof that that cut happened before the shchita, and therefore we could be lenient. Amar Rav Nachman, to which Rav Nachman says, all of this test would only be acceptable el shloi tafsu b'simonim. We didn't hold on to the simonim at the time of shchita. Says, because what did we say? That the Gemara, the svar that the Gemara originally gave, why we could be lenient, is because a kanop that's moved out of place is not able to have a shchita. Says the Gemara, when is that the case? That's only if you didn't hold on to the simonim when you did the shchita. Avol lo shanal shloi tofs b'simonim. So there, you could not possibly have done the shchita properly if you weren't holding, if the kana was not in the proper place. But tofs b'simonim shchachat, if you grabbed onto the simonim when you did the shchita, there, it's possible efshar shmuta shatasa shchuta. Even if it's out of place, it could still be a shchuta. It could still have a proper shchita. And therefore, since it could still have a proper shchita, the point that you wanted to make, that how to get a shchita if it was out of place, falls away. We learned at the end of the Mishnah Zeh Klal. The Mishnah summarized. Kosha en kemo chaya, any defect that won't, the animal will not survive treifa. What, and as we often learn in our shiurim, Mishnayis, every word of the Mishnayis are very precious. And the Mishnah doesn't just make a summary without coming to teach us something. So ask them, Lasuyamai, why did this cloud come to teach us? Lasuya Shev Shematza. As we learned at the beginning of the Perek, that the Shev Shematza was seven types of chedushim, seven types of treifas that weren't mentioned in the Mishnah, but they are included. And therefore, this is what it's coming to teach us. But I saw that the Bar Tanura points out that when we started the Perek and the Gemara pointed out the Shev Shematza, the Gemara also pointed out Pasgar as another group of treifas that are, as another group of treifas that are really treif, even though they're not mentioned in the Mishnah. So why does the Gemara say that the Zag Klal is coming to include the Basgar? So I saw that the Bar Tanura explains there's a very big difference between the Shev Shematza versus the Basgar. The Shev Shematza are halachas that were taught by the Meroim. And halachas that were taught by the Meroim, we need to find a place in a Mishnah that would say that they too are considered a treifa. But the Shev Shematza are halachas that weren't actually taught by Meroim. They were taught in brises. They weren't mentioned in the Mishnah, but they're brises. So he says something that's mentioned by the Meroim, we need to find a source for. Something that's mentioned by Tanoim, we don't need to have an independent source for them. Says the Gemara, Rav Yosef Rishba. Rav Yosef was a hunter. Moch begida nashi v'katli. When he would catch an animal and he didn't want the animal to run away, he would hit it at the sciatic nerve. And ultimately, explains Rashi, that animal could not survive that type of a wound and it would die. And the question was, before the animal dies, can you shecht it? Or is the fact that it has this diseased giranosha make it a treifa? And also, Kamei Rav Yehuda ben Beseira, this question was brought to Rav Yehuda ben Beseira, Amalahu, and he said, V'chi lahoisav al treifas yesh, is our job to end, to add halach to the treifas? Ein lecha el masha manu chachamim. The treifas, only the treifas that Chazal taught us, which are treif. Anything else is not a treifa, and we can't add it to the list. However, I did see that the Shulchan Aruch says that we've also learned in our perek the halacha of a musukenis. And even though the animal that's suffering from this disease that we just identified is not a treifa, it does have the status of musukenis that we discussed in our Masechta, how we treat in our perek, what we have to do with a musukenis to make sure that we should be allowed to eat that animal. Says the Gemara, another such simple halacha, similar halacha. The Bei Rav Papa Bar Abba Rishba, in the home of Rav Papa, who was also a hunter, macha b'kulya v'katli, when they would catch an animal, they would hit it by the kidney. And again, the point of doing so was that the animal should be weakened. Indeed, the animal will ultimately die, but it didn't die right away. And again, the question is, can we shech the animal, and the animal will not be a treifa as long as we do it before it dies? And says the Gemara, Asla Kameh Rav Abba, the question was asked to Rav Abba, Amlu v'chil lohisiv al treifas yesh, is our goal to add to the treifas? The only treifas that we could include are what Chazal identified. Ask the Gemara, but how can we say that these animals that are suffering from these situations is not a treifa? Haven't we learned in our Mishnah that what makes an animal a treifa What makes an animal a treif is the animal will not be able to survive. And as we've just been explaining, for kachazina de kamesa, we see that these animals cannot survive. Answers the Gemara, the badrul asama chaya, that if we would give the animals medicine, even though they're suffering from these animals, from these ailments, they can't survive. And what the Gemara is teaching us is that a very important point that we've made previously, and that is, an animal is not determined to be a treifa only because it could live or die. A treifa is, yes, if the animal cannot survive, it's a treifa. But if the animal could be healed, it's not. It is not a treifa. However, as we also have learned, so what will be the halacha on the various treifas that we've been learning in our Masechta? That the Mishnah, we just learned that the Meroim and Tanoim added other cases to something being a treifa. And now somebody will effectively be able to say, well, these treifas could be healed. Will that be the case or not? And all the Mefarshim point out that treifas are halachas that Chazal established. And once Chazal established what is a treifa, what's not a treifa, even if we'll be able to say that there's a way of healing it, just like Nada Gemara identified certain situations that could be healed, that won't make a difference. A treifa is what's established to be a treifa. When it's not one of the identified treifas, then to make a decision how to treat the animal, that decision can be made looking if it can't survive. The previous Mishnah, the first Mishnah, identified the various situations that would make an animal a treifa. Now the Gemara is speaking, now the Mishnah is going to identify what would not the various situations that are not a treifa. Eilik shares with the Hema, we have the following situations that an animal is suffering, and yet the animal will not be a treifa. Nikva Gigeris, if there's a hole that goes into the windpipe, which ultimately goes into the lung, nistaga, that where it has a split, but it's whole, it just split, it's not a treifa. However, says the Mishnah, at kamatechser, how much of the reya, how much of the gargaris, how much of the kana, how much of the trachea has to be missing that the animal should be still kosher? Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, at kisa atalki, until the coin a size of isa atalki, nifchasa halgalgoilus, if the skull is missing, v'leinik of krum shemayach, but the even though it's missing, the skull has a hole in it, but it did not affect the membranes that are around the brain. Nik of alev, if there's a hole in the heart. However, it didn't go all the way to the chamber of the heart. Nishbara suya hashidra, if the spinal column is broken. However, but not the spinal cord. Nitla covered, if the liver was missing. However, nishtaimani kazayis, there's still a kazayis of the liver remaining. Hemsusubesakosis, those are two of the stomachs that we discussed at the beginning of the Masechta. Hemsubesakosis, shenitnikvu, that they have a hole in the wall that connects them. So therefore the food will go from one stomach to the other stomach through that hole, and therefore won't be a treifa. Nitla tchol, if the spleen is missing. Nitlu akloyus, if the kidneys are missing. Nitla emshala, if the womb is missing. Charusa, if the lung shrivels up and becomes very stiff, like the palms of a palm tree. If this happened b'day shemayim, if it didn't happen because of human intervention, if it happened because there was, the way Gemara explains, there was thundering and lightning, and because of that, the animal got scared, got frightened, and that's what caused that it should become a charusa. Hageluda, that an animal, because it's suffering from some sort of a skin ailment, the skin of the animal fell off. Remeik Machsher, Rameya says it's kosher. V'chama paislim, he says that if the animal is missing its hide, the animal cannot survive. And therefore, Rameya holds that that would be a treifa. So, the first Mishnah of our Perek identified all of the cases that make an animal a treifa, and our Mishnah spoke about all the cases that speak, which make the animal kosher. And both Mishnayis began with the word ve'elu, these. So the word elu means these to exclude anything else. So the first Mishnah identifies elu. These are the situations of treifa, apparently to exclude that there are no other examples of treifa. This Mishnah says elu. These are the only cases where the animal will be kosher. So the question that the Gemara is facing, which elu is the real elu? Which is the elu that we have to really follow? Says the Gemara, Itma, Rav Yochan Amar, Rav Yochan says that the Mishnah that we began the Perek with, elu treifas, the Mishnah began with the words elu treifas dafka. That's the Mishnah that is to be followed. That's the Mishnah that's teaching us what is the treifa. Rav Shimon Lokish Amar, and Rav Shimon Lokish says the way to look at these Mishnayas, Eilk shares dafka, is the Mishnah that we just learned. And this Mishnah that teaches us that these are the examples that it's kosher, is to be taken, and the other Mishnah, not that way. Ask the Gemara, B'maikamifki, what is the basis of the Machloikis? So the Machloikis is based on what Rav Masna taught us. Domer Rav Masna, Hai Buka Da Atma. A Buka Da Atma, as we mentioned earlier in our shir, is when the thigh goes out of the socket where it's supposed to be in. The shav medachte, that it moved out of its place, treifa. That is a treifa. Now, that treifa was not mentioned in the Mishnah. And that's the machloikis of Rav Yochanan and Shlokish. Rav Yochanan Amar, elu treifas dachka, the first Mishnah of Perek that said elu dafka pay treifas, means only these situations are treifa. The elu treifas dafka tana. And mentioned the treifas, and then the Mishnah said ze klal to teach us that there are other cases that are also treifa. V'chazia, and he's l'rav masna, and he understood that comes to include the ze klal comes to teach us the case that Rav Masna taught us. The asya the ze klal, that the ze klal is coming to teach us that the buka da atma is treifa. My tama, why from all the various situations that we've been discussing are we picking specifically the buka da atma? The damila natule, because a buka da atma is similar to something that's missing. Tana, and therefore the tana says elu treifas. Hani with the treifa. What I mentioned there is a treifa. Hadra masna. It means to come to teach us that the mashna, the buka da atma, is not the same. It's not considered full-fledged removed from the animal. Rav Shimon HaKish Amar, Eluk Sheres Dafka. The Mishnah we just learned is the way the Eluk Trefus is Dafka. Tana Trefus. The Mishnah taught us in the first beginning of the parak, what are the Trefus? V'tana Zah Klal, and said Zah Klal V'chazi Deloy Asya. It's not included the baitama loyland kuvidami. It's not similar to something that has a hole. The loyal psukidami. It's not similar to something severed. Nami loydamya. It's also not similar to something that's completely missing. Tana elik sheris, and that's why I learned elik sheris. Hanedik sheris ha derab masna. Even though the case of a masna, which if we just had the first Mishnah, we would not include, but because Eluk Sheris is Dafka, now the Buka Da Atma is also Trefa. Gufa, Omer Amasna, as we speak about this, Alokha, Hai Buka Da Atma, the Shom Meduchte, if this thigh and sacket moved out of its place, it's Trefa. Rav Amak Shera, but it says the Gemara V'Ifsik Nivi, if there are veins that connect the thigh to the body, and those veins are torn, treifa. V'ilchasa, says the Gemara, even if siknami, even if they're torn, kshera, until misakli esukule, if the entire area of the hip is completely worn away, then he'll agree that it's a treifa. We learned in the Mishnah, akama techser, how much of the kana has to be missing and the animal will still be kosher. He says that Moshim and Gamaliel said, until an Isra Atalki. Amazira, Ata Dele Meschein Leshira, you that are not familiar with that shear, that means the Isra was a coin, and in where they lived, that was a coin that was not in circulation. I saw the Mefarshim explain, not only was it not a coin in circulation, it was a coin that was illegal to trade with where they lived with. So he said, Atam deloy mischamelan chashure, you who don't know the Isser, shure, how will you be able to identify the shear? Bedinner kurdana. It's a type of a coin that they used in the Hari Arat. So have a pshita zutrasa, and it's the same size as a small copper pruta. Mishtacha, and you can find this coin, ben pshita de pambadisa, between the coins that were used in pambadisa. Amar Rav Chana Besara, Rav Chana, who was actually a money changer, Eloi Minoy Avakai, by Navcha. Rav Navcha once came to me, Oboy Minoy, and he asked me, the Norik Dera, he wanted me to find for him this coin, the Dinaka, the Norik coin, Lisharbe Trefasa, to use to determine a Trefasa, Oboy Lameka Mikamei, and I wanted to get up. We had this great Talmud Chochem coming to me, and I wanted to stand up, v'loy shefkani, but he did not allow me to get up. Amali, and he said to me, shebeni shev, please sit. Ein balim nu rishoyim lamed ne tamid chachamim. People who are in the middle of working are not allowed to get up for a tamid chacham, b'shosh asukim b'malachtam, while they are working. So the Ben Yoyada explains that what happened in the Gemara was the Banafcha actually approached Rav Chana from behind him. And therefore Rav Chana didn't see him, and he didn't get up. Only when Rav Chana was actually standing right by him did he see this. Moreover, Rashi explains that the Gemara is speaking about a person that's working for somebody else, that somebody who's working for somebody else, Rashi says, may not stand up while he's in the middle of working, because he's supposed to be completely devoted to his work. If he's working for himself, so the concern that he's taking away from his employer is not there, but still, the halacha many Rishonim suggest is that while you're working, you should be concentrating on your work, and you don't have to get off a Talmud Chacham. Ask the Gemara V'loy, is that true? For Tanan, the Mishnah Masechta Bikurim teaches us that when the people would bring the Bikurim to Yerushalayim, Kabali umnis under mifneim, anyone who was in the middle of doing anything would stop and stand, b'shalom b'shlemim, and greet these people who were coming with the Bikurim. V'armalem, and they would say to them, Achenu anshei makom pleini, our brothers from this location, b'yacha b'shalom. They would greet them with shalom. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, mifneim umdim, for them people get up, but if they're working, they don't have to get off for Talmid Chachamim. From here we see the power of a mitzvah, because they're doing a mitzvah, and they're doing a mitzvah at their time to do the mitzvah, that and they have to get up. And as the Pnei Yeshua says, that even though Talmud Torah is connected kulam, the halacha is for Talmid Chachamim, we don't have to get up. And the reason, explains the Pnei Yeshua, because Talmud Torah is a mitzvah that's tadu. Talmud Torah is a mitzvah that happens all the time. And therefore, we don't have to get up. But for Bikurim being brought is something that happens only once a year. And for them, we have to get up. Says the Gemara, Nemai, you're saying, from here we're learning, the chaviva mitzvah b'shata, a mitzvah that's being done at the proper time, is so special that for people who are doing that mitzvah, we get up. Says the Gemara, who says that's the reason? Dilma, k'dei shleitei nimtzemach shin lasulavoy. The reason we have to get up, that we don't want the people who will bring the Bikurim will feel that this mitzvah is not such an important mitzvah, that nobody stops for them. And therefore, there is no proof to this discussion. There is no proof from this discussion what the halacha requires. So here the Gemara has begun a discussion, what is the halacha if you get up or you don't get up while you're working for a Talmud Chacham. The Shulchan Aruch explains that somebody who's working not just for somebody else, so like we said before, if you're working for somebody else, you're not allowed to get up. If you're working for yourself, you may get up, but not required to get up. But the Aruch HaShulchan adds a new dimension to this discussion. And the Aruch HaShulchan says that the entire discussion of this Gemara was only in their times. He explains in their times, people would be sitting on the floor. And getting up from the floor to greet somebody is not simple. And therefore, the halacha is that certainly if you're working for somebody else, but even if you're working for yourself, there is no requirement to get up to greet that person. However, says the Aruch HaShulchan, b'zman hazeh, where we sit on a chair, so getting up from a chair is not that difficult. And I think another dimension is that people, even if they work for other people, they're not so makbid about standing up during work. Therefore, maybe the halacha would be you do have to get up. The Paiskim say that this halacha also is extended to other case, and that is the case when somebody is bringing a baby to the bris milah, that you're supposed to get up for it'll cover that baby. But some say that that's really not part of the bris. And the Mordechai says that you get up because of the covered of the mitzvah, not because of the people who are actually doing the mitzvah, but because of the mitzvah is we're getting up, and the preparation and getting ready to do the mitzvah is part of the mitzvah. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that now we understand that many have that they stand up by when they're saying Pesukah de Zimra. They stand up by Yivarech David. He explains, because the minig was that when they came to Yivarech David, when they said Yivarech David, that's when they would collect stock up. So in order to show honor to those that are collecting stock up, the people who are collecting stock up are people who are involved in doing a mitzvah. And our Gemara just taught us that out of respect to somebody who's doing a mitzvah, one should get up. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that's why we stand up by Yivarech David. That was where the minig began, to show honor to those who are doing, to show honor doing a mitzvah. This question that we're discussing here also has ramifications. If, as I said, may you get up if you want to, when you're working to greet the Talmud Chacham. Certainly, if you're working for yourself, there is no question that you're allowed to get up. If you're working for someone else, it really depends on the conditions on which you're working. And if you're working in a place that they are most concerned that you can concentrate on your work, maybe there would not be a heter to stand up. Continues the Gemara. We've been learning the shear of an Isser Italki is the size of a hole that would make the Kana a trefer. Now, and then we saw the size, a different mandama said the size of a cellar. And the Gemara asks a very simple question. When we speak about an Isser, what does that mean? Ad v'ad b'klal or ad v'ad loyad b'klal? In other words, what would be a halacha if you have a hole exactly the size of an Isser or a cellar? Will that already be a trefer or not? Aram Nachman Kisela, when we speak about the skull having a hole the size of a cellar, when it has the hole exactly the size of a cellar, it's treated kiyesim cellar, like it's larger than a cellar. And similarly, when we speak about the kana having a hole the size of a keser, the iser is ki yeser mikeser, is even when it's already treated like it's larger than a iser. Why? Because al mikasover Rav Nachman, it's obvious that the opinion of Rav Nachman is that we say ad v'loy ad b'chlal, that up to the iser, but once it's already an iser, but once it's already a sela, then it's already going to be a treifa. So in other words, this is a question from throughout Shas. When we ever say something, do we say ad v'ad b'chlal, or do we say ad v'loy ad b'chlal? Ask the Gemara, how could you say that? Ask the Gemara, Eisvei Rav L'Rav Nachman, the way they used to have beds in the time of Chazal was they had straps on the bread, horizontal and vertical. And the Mishnah and Masechta Kalim teaches us, Hevel HaYotz Min Amita, if you have a strap, you have leftover strap, and the strap is extending past the bed. At Chamisha Tfachim, if it's less than 5 Tfachim, even if the bed became Tamei, this extra rope, this extra leather, is Tahar, because it has no use. My laugh, isn't that mean to teach us? Chamisha Kalmata, that anything 5 Tfachim or less are not Tamei. Says the Gemara Loi. Says Rav Nachman, that's not the way to understand that Mishnah. Rather, the way to understand the Mishnah is Chamisha Kamamala. Once it has 5 Tfachim, it's already Tamei. Because, as the Rishonim explained, once it's 5 Tfachim, it can be used to tie the Korban Pesach to the bed. Tashma, says the Gemara, the Mishnah says, Mechamisha Vada Sara Tamei. My love, doesn't that mean a sorrow kalmata? That if you have exactly 10, it's still going to be treated like it's less than 10. Because once it's more than that, it has no use. So it's more loy. A sorrow kalmala. When it has more than tfache, when it's more than 10, 10 is already like more than 10, and it will already be tar. But the Mishnah, this Mishnah, says the Gemara, is not definitive in either direction. Do we say adva ad b'klal, or do we not say adva ad b'klal?